You're listening to SBS News.
A United Nations-hosted international aid conference for Afghanistan has raised $1.4 billion in aid for the suffering population. United Nations Secretary-General Antonio Guterres says the country's economy is on the brink of disaster.
Humanitarian aid will not solve the problem if the economy of Afghanistan collapses. My appeal to the international community is to find ways to allow for an injection of cash in the Afghan economy, allowing the economy to breathe and avoiding a collapse that would have devastating consequences for the people of Afghanistan and possibly would trigger a massive exodus with the consequences that you can imagine in relation to the stability of the countries of the region.
World leaders and the United Nations Human Rights Chief voiced concerns about the Taliban's first steps in establishing power and government in Afghanistan. Mr. Guterres says it is right to engage with the Taliban to support the people of the country.
It's impossible to provide humanitarian assistance inside Afghanistan without engaging with the de facto authorities of the country. And I do believe that it is very important to engage with the Taliban at the present moment for all aspects that concern the international community, be it about terrorism, be it about human rights, be it about drugs, be it about the nature of the government. Our attitude is to engage. Humanitarian aid abides by humanitarian principles. Humanitarian aid doesn't abide by political strategies.
But the pledges were paired with demands that the Taliban take steps to respect human rights. Many states made it clear in Geneva that they were not attaching any conditions to their short-term humanitarian support. British Secretary of State for Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Affairs, Dominic Raab, says cooperation with the Taliban regime will depend on treatment of foreign aid workers, women, children and minorities.
We will not give aid directly to the Taliban and therefore it's going to be absolutely crucial that aid agencies are able to operate securely and freely in Afghanistan. And of course, we're very mindful that in many parts of Afghanistan, it is only women who have access to and can deliver some of the critical services that benefit women and girls.
It was the first donor conference since the militant Islamist movement took power in August. Many Afghans continued to flee their homes, causing the number of people crossing land borders to rise. Citizens that remain in Afghanistan are hoping for a stable environment and the resumption of local economic activities. Petrol prices are starting to drop, however, a large number of residents remain unemployed and unable to make a living, with many waiting months for salary payouts. More than 47% of the country's population lived below the poverty line last year, with the unemployment rate above 11% for the past decade. Pakistan's Foreign Affairs Minister, Makhdoom Shah Mahmood Qureshi, offered perspective in his speech.
We must not forget millions of Afghans in large refugees hosting countries, from whom international support has dwindled over the years. In line with the principle of international responsibility and burden sharing, host communities must be supported, especially during these challenging times of COVID-19.
Meanwhile, in the United States, the country's military withdrawal was at the center of questioning by politicians. Secretary of State Antony Blinken defended the Biden administration's much-criticized handling of the military withdrawal before Congress.
Upon taking office, President Biden immediately faced the choice between ending the war or escalating it. Had he not followed through on his predecessor's commitment, attacks on our forces and those of our allies would have resumed, and the Taliban's nationwide assaults on Afghanistan's major cities would have commenced. That would have required sending substantially more U.S. forces into Afghanistan to defend ourselves and prevent a Taliban takeover, taking casualties, and with at best the prospect of restoring a stalemate and remaining stuck in Afghanistan under fire indefinitely. Why would another year, another five, another 10?
Mr. Blinken faced questions and debate about the administration's response to the quick collapse of the Afghan government and, more specifically, the State Department's response to what many claim was a predictable result in the final days of the American military presence there. In remarks before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Mr. Blinken sought to deflect allegations of unpreparedness. and he highlighted the enormous evacuation task.
Even the most pessimistic assessments did not predict that government forces in Kabul would collapse while U.S. forces remained. As General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has said, nothing I or anyone else saw indicated a collapse of this army and this government in 11 days. The evacuation itself was an extraordinary effort under the most difficult conditions imaginable by our diplomats, by our military, by our intelligence professionals.
Gregory Meeks, followed by Michael McCaul of the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
The choice before President Biden was between a full withdrawal and the surging of thousands of Americans to Afghanistan for an undefined time. To argue that there was a third option, a limited troop presence where the safety of our personnel could be preserved, in my mind, is a fantasy.
This did not have to happen, but the president refused to listen to his own generals and the intelligence community, who warned him precisely what would happen when we withdrew. This was an unmitigated disaster of epic proportions. I never thought in my lifetime that I would see an unconditional surrender to the Taliban.
And finally, at the Pentagon, Press Secretary John Kirby announced that all flights of Afghan evacuees into the United States have been halted for another 7 days at the request of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention due to measles cases at three different bases. Marcus Megalo-Economos, SBS News.